Blog Talk Radio.
Had a great week, and I have a better weekend to follow. Great weather, you know, here. I'm assuming everyone's having a good taste of that, which is wonderful. It's time to get out, get your heels up a little bit, enjoy it before the next snow, which will be like tomorrow, the way things have been going. And hello, Rex. How are you tonight?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. What's up?
Very good. Very good. I'm glad to hear you're doing just fine. How's your weather today? It's like in the 80s today.
Right now, it's 73.
Nice. That is nice. Yeah, so looks like we have a good board of poetry again tonight, as always. I love it. I love it. Lots of audios. And Kate
was
joining us, but she's away for 3 days. The nerve of her taking a couple of days and going away. That's not what I told her. I told her I have a good time. So right now it's you and myself, and we have Laurent with us. So hello, Laurent, and welcome aboard. And
well, good evening to the two of you.
Hey.
And
Who said that? Hey. Was that a certain bear?
That was Fat Albert.
Oh, that's right.
Well, that
what did Yogi Bear say? What was it? Smarter than the average bear. Yeah, that's right. I thought you said the other hour. Okay.
Definitely for the picnic basket.
Ed Boo-Boo.
Ranger Smith.
Yep. That's the way that works. Oh, my goodness. So, Friday again. Oh, well, this week blew past, but it sure did. It sure did. Next week will not be quite so speedy, I don't think. But I guess we'll see. And, in case everybody's wondering, we have a contest up for next Tuesday because I can do this now. But, nobody can yell at me because I'm the only one yelling. But contest for next Tuesday is next Tuesday is up on the 9 Muses, not next Newsday. So anybody wants to toss in the right, contest is open until then. Thank you, everybody. So anyway, Rex, what's new in your world? What are we doing this Sunday? We got Mother's Day coming.
It's Mother's Day. Yes.
Don't tell me nothing. Sorry. Yes. I know you have a contest.
Is that Sunday? The Mother's Day Sunday or Saturday?
Well,
Sunday.
Mother's
Day is always. Always. Unless you're me and Mother's Day is every day.
Yeah, somebody's always calling you a mother something. Is that it? No,
and don't
bad joke. Sorry, bad joke.
That's okay. You're calling in the mail, too. Just saying.
Bad joke.
So what do you have up for Sunday there, Rex? God, I don't even know what day it is now.
It's a nice mix of different songs. We've got Let It Be from the Beatles as one of the prompts. I've got Mama, I'm Coming Home from Ozzy. Bob Seger's Mama. We've got Mama by the Spice Girls. We've got Three Dog Night. Mama Told Me Not to Come. And we got the Shirelles, Mama Said.
Yeah.
Glen Campbell, The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. We've got The Baby. I forget who that one's by. No one will tell me. Wait, there it is. Maybe I'll come back to you. The Baby by Blake Shelton. The Wish by Bruce Springsteen. We've got Nobody Loves Me But Like My Mama, BB King. Mamas Don't Let Your Babies, Waylon Jennings. Tim McGraw, I Called Mama. And the last one was Mama Tribe by Merle Haggard. So it's a nice mix. She can have a little bit of fun while still honoring Mama. And say, hey, yeah, you know what? Mama Tried and Mama Said. And there's definitely things you should have paid attention to.
I think what I like about the contest is not all the same traditional songs, you know, one after another after another.
Yeah, I
didn't
want to
go
that lot again because that kind of leaves out a bunch of people that don't have fond memories. This way they can tickle themselves into something else. So it works both ways.
Right, yeah. Add a little bit of something different in there. And that's wonderful. And you're going to have to ask them all to write some new songs for next year. I think you covered them all. No, but it's that's great. That's great. And let's see, what do we have? Part center is part thing tonight. And then tomorrow, I believe, is Exploring Ecrasis with V2 and Dan DeShino, followed by the Late Night Library? No, that's next week. Don't confuse me.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yeah, next week, this week is Victoria and the Late Night Library. So she's got a board up and the poetry is already posted. And so as far as I know, that's going on. And then next week is Delving Into the Depths of Darkness. But Sunday is Mother's Day, and that's your show. So we're moving right along here, little bits at a time. Let me see. yeah, other than that, I don't have a whole lot going on. I just figured I'd mention those few things because I know Mother's Day Sunday, and I wanted to at least get to that point. And then we have the ever-famous front page picks on Monday. Yep, yep. Yep, yep. And, yeah, and I started out with the 9 users on Tuesday show, so we're good for now. You know, I could go into Wednesday, but I'm not going to. Anyway, everybody, I'm done with all my yammering. I think we're going to hit some poetry for now. And we got some carryovers from last week. I think we have like one of them. So we're going to start there, and we're going to roll our way through this. So, Rex, I'll put the first piece. I'll put the first piece up for you by Lawrence 67, and it's called Little Boy. Whenever you're ready.
All right. Little Boy by Lawrence 67. Little Boy, the adventures of Nigel the Fat Cat and his homie, Alfie. And run, run, jump. And land softly on one paw. Yeah, buddy. Now pick up my rock and twist and back to the start. Yeah, yeah. Foul, foul. I call foul. You used two paws to land. I saw you, cheater. What? You're full of crap. I landed softly on one paw. Did you not read my entry? I win hopscotch again. Liar, liar. I'm a kick your ass, cheater. Well, come on with it, your bad self. Put him up, feline. Be lion. Ow, ow. Hey, kitties, want to play? I'll count to 10. You guys hide and I'll seek you. 1, 2, 3, 4. Run, run, hide behind the trash can. Excuse me, I'm hiding here. 4, 5, 6, 7. I was here first. Liar, cheater, I'm going home. I'm going home too. 8, 9, 10. Ready or not, here I come. I hear you. I'm going to seek you. Where are you? Over here? No. Over here? No. Little boy, where are you? It's time to get ready for school. Over here? No. Over here? No. End poem? No. End poem. All right, the rock needs to kick that one off.
Well, how can you not like this little piece? I mean, I like the Nigel and Alfie thing. It's kind of unexpected as to what they're going to do, and I like the interplay between the two, especially the game of hopscotch. I can imagine the fat cat is only playing that. I've never seen a cat yet land on one paw, though. He must be cheating. Either way, nice effort at humor. It gave me a chuckle and a smile, and that's to be very, that is very precious. You said, sorry. Nicely done.
Thank you, Ron. And Gene, how about you?
Well, you know, I think this is a comical piece by Lawrence. I'm not, you know, I kind of feel like it was left unfinished, you know, with the end poem. No. So, I mean, I was looking to see what happened next. So since I didn't get that, I felt kind of let down at the end. But it was cute. And it was fun. You know, he always has a way with his Alfie and Nigel pieces. And I think you just read them just wonderfully. Because, you know, just how to swap out your voice and keep it in sync, and I don't know. So great job, Rex, and thank you, Lawrence, for sharing with
us. Yeah, I do enjoy these. They're fun pieces to play with, especially when you get Nigel and Alfie are a treat. And I guess he gets his stories because he's got Nigel and Alfie, the cats at home, and you see that in his picture right there up top, Nigel and Alfie, so... they're always into something, so you might as well take the play on voice and drop in the humor because there's not nearly enough humor these days. And these are always delightful. Plus, 99% of them are they work from the kids on up. There are a couple that walk a little off the Gilgit edge, but those are a little bit more adult ones. But for the most part, kids can play with these ones too, so they're enjoyable on that level. Just a little bit of fun. Nice, Lawrence. Thank you very much. All right, Jane, we're back on you.
I'm telling you, this doesn't surprise me. Just saying. Okay. Laurent, I'm going to put this next piece up for you, and this one is by Ben Hart. And whenever you are ready.
Okay, as soon as I see it.
There you go.
Okay, refresh. There it is. All right. Street Performers by Ben Hart. The street, let me get my glasses. I know where this is going to go if I don't. The street performer. Thermal eyes wide open. Love seen through the lens of warmth. A bold invasion of a blue world. And the lone street performer plays blue instrumentals. A cold rebellion against the quiet. And he isn't there for copper feathers in his cap, in open defiance of the music dying, and upon the closing of his lips, silence may have laid her trap, but she couldn't freeze his fingertips. Acoustic Revolution by the balladic pugilist. Lover hates to worship, but loves stealing, but loves stating her worth, queen of these pagan peripheries of black horse and hungry earth. The only womb that ever expelled us was this gypsy garden of restive black dirt. Mama had black hair and blue eyes and always told us kids to play outside, chase fantasies and lose our baby teeth, take as much as we could steal from the cherry trees. Mama also had a fever, and since I've only dreamed her, this is acoustic atrophy. Imperfect requiems on dying day, and with oblivion, just one loving look away, I bleed rum on me, flame in my haste to keep alive the fire. Oh, good God, light the fires. And the absolution of innocence always comes early. Victim at 16, alive she'd barely been before snakes slithered into Eden and had its way with Eve. Feature 10 by just someone screaming. God's taking names. Looks like his is up on Sunday. To be baptized in the breakers of melancholy seas of holy water. Sirens' tears and sailors' sweat. But it's all the same. Salts in the wounds of Preacher X. The preacher goes running with a Mustang across mezzo-soprano roads, hoping to fall in love to an Amy MacDonald song before the day is over and God knows they're gone. Martian One by Somerset Skype Society. Will the Englishman we put on Mars look for home among the heavens, listening closely for Stratford End screams, faking a lonely smile in the dark, slowly dying there because we let him. And will he figure out that we misled him? Talking about Michael's REM dreams with mute 21st century machines who only believe what digital eyes see and call back freedom. Never again have an atmosphere and breathe it in. A cup of tea in the garden or a Sunday drive to Margate with a wife and her Pomeranian. Now that last one's more of a win. What a life. What a life. The English alien. And
great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. Well, Jane, you want to tackle first?
Of course. Of course. I thought that this was a really well written piece. There's a lot going on, as always with Ben's work. Usually takes me a while to kind of tune in at all. But I have to say, there was so much that I liked in it. Picking a spot is just rough. I liked The Preacher X just someone screaming. Those two stanzas there I thought were really well written and well done, and I thought that they were very, I found them intriguing. because they were leading me somewhere. And then all of a sudden we're at Martian 1 by Somerset, like today, in society. And I think that that really was another twist, you know, to this, is that, you know, the first section, and then there was a twist in the second, and then we have a twist again in the third of the vignettes. And I said, Ben did a great job with that. I loved his wording and his metaphors for that. Yeah, just really well done. So, yep, that's it. Thanks for sharing, Ben.
Nice. Thank you, Gene. Laurent, how about you? You got to read it.
I did. And boy, was I confused as I was reading it. And I just read it a second time. I've come to the conclusion that not all street performers are buskers singing their songs on a street corner. Street performers are the everyday people and the not-so-ordinary people who have their own songs, many of them internalized, many of them out of sight and out of mind, yet street performers nonetheless, because eventually they're going to go walking. So I really see the Martian One and the Preacher X and the balladic pugilist as being street performers. And within their stanzas, we find out a little bit about them and the abstract nature of their existence. I hope that satisfies.
I like it. I get where you're going. I ran this too. I look at the street performer, those first two stanzas, because of the next three. The first two are built around the creator, thermal eyes wide open, love seen through the lens of warmth, a bold invasion of blue world, and a lone street performer plays blue instrumentals, a cold rebellion against the quiet, the note of creation, those first two stanzas that had me ringing. And I did like that note, the acoustic revolution by the balladic pugilist. What a great thought in the title, as well as Preacher X by Just Someone Screaming, and the Martian One by Somerset Dive Society. Clever little touches to add a little extra oomph and maybe something else in between. That thought with the acoustic revolution, you come back down to the bottom end of this, where that last stanza. And the absolution of innocence always comes early. Victim at 16, alive she'd barely been before snakes slithered into Eden and had its way with Eve. There's the kind of the notion of the first real sin, that of not playing by the rules, so to speak. And Preacher X, well, that just walked itself into the right in the outset, God taking names. Looks like his is up on Sunday. The idea of how we've walked so far away from religion that we're not on the same wavelength with where we're supposed to be and where we used to be. Now, the Martian One, that kind of hits back at the idea of we've become alien to ourselves and the planet itself. Nobody is anywhere near the thought of what humanity could be. So, in essence, we are all aliens walking an alien world, and that thought of being alone reference points to COVID, or to leaving that one person sitting on Mars with no intention of actually bringing them back home. Desertion, so to speak. Desertion.
Well,
soul.
Well, wait now. I got to tell you that that last line reminded me an awful lot of that song by Sting. I'm an alien in I'm an English alien, an alien in New York. You know that song? I'm an alien. I'm a legal alien. I'm an Englishman in New York. I just thought of that immediately because of the way you worded it, which led me towards my conclusion, but I can see you.
Well, anyway, I'm done anyway. So I did like that Stratford End screen, that note to Stratford upon Avon. So nicely done, Dane. Ben, your pieces are always indicative of thought-provoking, so I like it.
Challenging.
that too, yeah. And I think there's probably two or three initial points that you can always roll into, and you can veer off in any number of directions. based on what you see and what you read. And I think that's the general idea. Ben wants you to think. All right, Jane, we're coming up back to you.
Okay, well, let me see now. The next one on my list is The Beast with Five Fingers by Stellina. And I have an audio for this one, so let me hit the button. Here we go.
It crawls in the surreal still of night from its lair, seeking vengeance as the victim of vile conspiracy, haunting and hypnotic, hovering in the air. Macabre music tinkles through tenebrosity, rousing the sleeping to face their worst nightmare as ebony and bone keys echo melodies of melancholy. Anticipation growing as their footsteps draw near, waiting to strangle the guilty. Its fingers flex, quivering in excitement. It can sense their fear as it takes its unrelenting hold on their necks. As their life is held by this disembodied hand, bulging bloodshot eyes stare in disbelief and confusion. In dying moments, struggling to understand, questioning, is it all just a terrifying delusion? Then, through the hourglass, sift the last grains of sand, and into the shadows retreats the midnight intrusion. There stalks the silhouette of the beast with five fingers, its loathsome form lurking, hidden from view. Yet its pernicious presence throughout the house lingers, biding its time until it comes for you.
Great read, Stellina. Thank you for the sound cloud. It is very much appreciated. Laurent, we're going to start with you.
Yeah, I've got to quote the first stanza as a whole, although I won't, because I don't want to substitute Stellina's marvelous reading of mine. That was so well done. You know, in literature and poetry and prose, you know, that first line should, can grab the reader. There's a book by, I forget the author, but his first line is, "The camel began to die at noon." And that will immediately keep your attention right on what you're reading. So when she writes, "It crawls in the surreal still of night for its lair, seeking vengeance as the victim of vile conspiracy," well, there's nothing on earth that's going to drag me away from the next lines. And as you read it, as she writes, anticipation growing as their footsteps draw near, so does my anticipation grow as I begin to read it and see where it's going. And lines like, "as their life is held by this disembodied hand, bulging bloodshot eyes stare in disbelief and confusion in dying moments," you realize that she's just done a perfect job of tribute, if you want to call it that, inspired by the great Peter Lorre. Just a really nicely done SoundCloud, something that Stellina is awfully good at.
Absolutely. I remember that that film way back in the day, back in the 40s, I think. Gene, how about you?
You know, I thought this was an excellent take on the dark film, you know, of the Beast with Five Fingers. I thought it was just wonderful imagery in here. She built the anticipation as we went through the read with her. you know, it's just a way of doing that, as does Arcana as well. But pace that read in such a way that you're waiting to hear what's next, you know. You have two choices, you either wait or you read ahead. So, but I think the read is truly like, somewhat captivating because it holds you there once you want to hear it. And I did grab the dissipation growing as your footsteps draw near, waiting to strangle the guilty, its fingers flesh, quivering in excitement and sense of fear as it takes its unrelenting toll on your neck. Only because, you know, it just was kind of put it in that kind of perspective of the, you know, the thoughts of that. But, you know, as always, you know, it's a great alliteration. It's a wonderful audio. I mean, you know, I just repeat myself, but things go on autopilot. But it was very well done. And I liked, you know, the imagery and the thoughts throughout. So nice job, Selena, and thanks for sharing with us. Great audio.
Yeah, it was eerie. It reminded me of another movie, The Crawling Hand from the 60s. I went had an astronaut whose last words before his spaceship exploded on coming back to Earth was, my hand, it's making me do things. Then the ship blew up, and some kids found the hand later on. And from there, it goes into the very much the same like this. But there are a couple of things. That first stanza, that last line, as ebony and bone keys echo melodies of melancholy, there's a nice introduction, dropping in the piano to the original, the thought with Peter Lorre and the piano man who only played with one hand because the other one was not cooperative, so to speak. And the back end of this last one, there stalks the silhouette of the beast with five fingers. Its loathsome form lurking, hidden from view, yet its pernicious presence throughout the house lingers, biding its time until it comes for you. That's a nice offer to the ghostly form, yet walks once more. I see done, Stelina. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, we're back to you.
Okay, the next piece I'm going to put up is by A.R. Mundell. I'm going to give this one a read, and it's called Peckish Storm. So, here we go. Rumbled rain hugs conservatory glass, its skittering paws cross sky blue slab. The metal creaks with hold on roof, plastic humming with reproof. The sky is yawning long and wide, leaking tears drip down inside. River dance in startled sheets over plastic on street. Its belly growls for petaled treats, rips from blossom twirling feet. Scarfed and snarled, the colors drown into puddles bogged by brown. So evening cast surveys the yield, pallid petals pile the field. Left to rot in rattled bones, as Storton smooths out the gentler tone. Hunger sated, breathing still, unrepentant, for it still. And so.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. And Rob, we're going to start with you. What you think?
I think that this boy, this poet is very, very clever to take a word like peckish, which means hungry, but not just hungry, because it also means crotchety. So you're going to be a little uneven tempered. And I like what he does with the personification of the storm, using those attributes that I just I quoted off the title to give us a perfect demonstration of how a storm could be peckish and what it does as it eats its food. I thought it was great.
Nice. Thank you, Rob. And Jean, you got Rita. How about you?
Well, I like Amy's writing very much. I like the short lines, and I love the rhyme scheme of it. And, you know, I thought it was just really well done. The imagery was great, and the thoughts were, easy for my feeble brain to roll with. So, you know, there's rain. We have what I got from this report paper through one of our trees here. We have a tree that drops all its petals the first rain in spring. And the rain just comes and it just beats all the petals off of it. But other things survive from that, you know, and the petals land on the ground and they kind of nourish the earth in some ways for other things to grow in my, you know, my book. But I thought it was wonderfully done. So, Amy, beautiful job. Very well said. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I'll take both ends on that. I did like what you said about Peckish. That is a nice touch to open up the thought, Peckish storm. Then you roll into that first stanza. Rumbled rain hugs conservatory glass. Its skittering paws cross sky blue slabs. A nice opening. It's gentle in that first. And then it gets a little darker. The metal creaks. And then a little darker still. The sky is yawning long and wide. Its leaking tears drip down its sides. Whew. And I like the thought. It's a river dance in sparkled sheets over plastic on the streets. And then getting into it again. Its belly growls for petal treats ripped from blossoms, rolling sweets. The nice ideal of opening up with a rumbled rain. You get that note, some thunder, and then it starts to rain. Then it gets a little more, a little more, and a little more. Then you get that full-throated angle to start off the last five stanzas. Its belly growls and scarfed and snarled. The nice touches to the intensity growing. And then the back end, hunger sated, breathing stills, unrepentant for its kills. No, it's, hey, it might offer up a chilling moment. Some things die in that moment, like said Jane. But without that replenishment of beauty in H2O, these things don't grow again after that. So welcome the rain. It's good for all things. Nicely done, Amy. Thank you. All right, Jane.
Okay. Let me see what I have. The next one I'm going to put up for a lot. So the law on a couple of stuff is called Oatmeal in the Morning by Jack Thompson. And, if I can find the link. Sorry, I can't go too well. Hold on. There we go. Ready when you are.
Okay, still looking for it. There it is. Okay. Excuse me. Oatmeal in the morning. Let's eat oatmeal in the morning, he said, eyeing the dried apricots and sweet mango slices, corneas kissing the bowl. Oatmeal, hot and steaming, with walnuts, coconut pieces, tart cherries, Fuji apple bits, and peaches swimming, dates and raisins too, in a toasty oat stew, giant silver spoons not big enough to handle this breakfast, made for kings, queens, and royalty. End quote.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, is something sweet in here for you?
What can I say? It's oatmeal. Wonderful combinations and great thoughts. And, you know, my wife really likes my made-from-scratch oatmeal in the morning. And me too. She's enjoyed. So I guess it doesn't get much better than that, you know, to have someone who's going to make this wonderful oatmeal and serve it to you with sweet sweets and, you know, make it something wonderful. Why not, you know? I mean, that's a wonderful way to start your day. It's not so much the oatmeal itself, it's the love behind it and the creating of the oatmeal and the gesture, I think. So well done, Jack, and thanks for sharing. Sorry?
That is not a cheap breakfast.
Oatmeal?
Well, not with all the walnuts and coconuts. And if you put all that in a bowl of oatmeal, it's expensive.
Yeah, but things like that you acquire as time goes by. You know, you don't use it all in one day. So, kind of worked out.
Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, you got to read it. What about you?
Well, I didn't mean to interrupt Gene, but I did, and I apologize for that. But I, right off the bat, I appreciated the makeup of the breakfast, because there's not a thing that's listed that I don't like to eat myself, except possibly walnuts and coconut pieces nowadays. It's tougher and tougher to eat that kind of food, but tart cherries, peaches, and dates, and raisins, and a toasty oat stew, it's enough to make me want to go out and buy all the ingredients and make it immediately. I like the three-line stanzas, nice and tight, and it says what it has to. This breakfast is made for kings, queens, and royalty. And aren't we all kings, queens, and royalty when we want to be at breakfast?
Nice. I like that. And you're right. There's something about this in taking the simplicity of oatmeal, which most of us have had as kids and still enjoy from time to time. It's those notes drying in here, the dried apricots, the mango spices, walnuts, coconut, Fuji apple, nice, tart cherries, peaches, dates and raisins. I like the thought with dates. Raisins, one suggestion though. Drop some dark rum into a bowl, add the raisins so they bloat up, then add them to the oatmeal. Good, now that's a little bit on the royal side. And definitely a topper for the morning.
Have you guys ever had really bad oatmeal? Old and lumpy and sticky.
Yes.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
If you've got a pack, you've got one of those boxes or the tubes, and you leave it too long in the cupboard, and it kind of it hasn't been what it's been allowed to sweat a bit. That's when you, yeah, that ain't going to be some good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Gene, we're back up to you.
Okay. Well, read the next one. This is called Archosaurus by Casey Zhang. And it goes something like this. Archosaurus. They call her a snake in the grass only because they've never witnessed a crocodile before. And so on.
Great read, Gene. Short, sweet, and deliberate. Damn. Do you want to meet this one there, Laurent?
Well, I love it. I love the image. I love the texture of the painting. It's very much in line with painters like Frazetta, fantasy painters who know how to get that texture on a crocodile. And, of course, the female figure, nose up with those eyes, that snake in the grass, you know, because a woman can be a woman. I suppose a man, too, but in this case, a woman can be a snake in the grass and a crocodile all at the same time, depending how and when they want to eat you.
Yeah. Nicely said. Thank you. Gene, this is right up your alley, short, sweet, to the point, and you got to read it, too.
Yes, it is. I agree with Laurent, except for it's all about the teeth. Yeah. I thought this was a great brevity. Well written, a great take on the image that's there. I don't know which came first. So the image is a great take on the image, or it was a fabulous image to find. I have a feeling it's probably the first one. But I thought it was really well done. I mean, you know, they call her a snake in the grass. I mean, because they've never witnessed a crocodile before. It's, you know, it says a lot in those few words. It does. Makes you stop and think for a second. So great job, Casey, and thanks for sharing.
It does hit on that note of the crocodile of before. I'm kind of reminded of the saltwater crocs. They can swim across oceans, and they're very large. They'll take on sharks for meals, and they can travel from great places from large arenas. They've got no problem with just moving around to where they want. But this one, it definitely, that picture is quite a piece of work. I like it, especially the nice touch to if you look at her reflection in the water. Only her nose shows from her nose up, but if you look at the water, you get that reflection. There's the neck right there. So that's a nice touch in the picture itself.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Casey. Mm-hmm. All right, Jane, we're coming back to you.
Okay, so the next one I'm going to put up is by Scott Sharp. And I have an audio for this one. This is called The Artist's Mind by S. Sharp.
The Artist's Mind. Palette of words, weep, sweet maple sunsets. Standing guard for monarchs or giant swallowtails, winged royalty, sentinels to the natural crown, transforming humans to angels, wept and windswept by brushes bound by no rules but nature's. Dotted skies, salt and pepper, shaken like birds from the slash pines, like thoughts from the artist's mind, delivering, carrying the seed of imagination, where no wings can take you, where all birds must fly one day, somewhere beyond the moon, over Killarney.
Great read there, Scott. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Gene, we're coming to start with you.
Well, of course you are. I think that this would have more of an impact on me if I knew what the moon over Killarney was. So I'm not going to lie. I have no idea. I mean, I thought the piece was great. I loved the imagery throughout. I thought it was well written. You know, it had wonderful thought to it. But I think in the end, that very last line, I kind of wish I knew what he was writing about. So, you know, maybe it was an image for the peanut, because it says here that in that contest and an invite-only contest. Maybe that's the answer, and I just don't see the image. So. But an excellent right, Scott, and really the imagery was really good. And I enjoyed it. So, nice job.
Nice, thank you. And, Laura, I'm sorry.
Sorry, did you say me? You must have, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you take a look inside the artist's mind, if you think about it, he can write about anything he wishes. There's any palette of words in any genre, in any tone, from any perspective, saying anything, as he says, brushes bound by no rules but nature's. You can take it beyond nature if you wish. You can imagine things that nature has not yet revealed to you, where no wings can take you, but where all birds must fly one day, similar beyond the moon of a Killarney. I'm not sure what reference to that is either, except for the fact that he's got a poem written, The Moon Over Killarney, by Tom Sadler. I'm assuming it's a song, perhaps, or a book, perhaps. But Killarney, is that Irish or Scottish, Rex, do you think?
I think I got it.
Is that Scotland? Scottish?
I got it.
Yeah,
got it.
The Winter Park Festival.
Yes.
Okay, I had imagined it as some fantasy image, perhaps. Yeah, but at any rate, I like where you took this, and beautifully done.
Nice. Thank you very much. Well, he starts out the artist's mind, so it's got to be a painting. Palette of words, weep, sweet maple sunsets, a nice reference to the background right there. And the sort of monarchs or giant swallowtails, winged royalty. So you're looking at butterflies also, and transforming humans to angels, wept and windswept by brushes bound by no rules but nature's. A sort of dipping that palette of colors into what he sees. I like the thought in the second stanza. Dotted skies, salt and pepper shaken like birds in splash pines. Nice touch to what you see as maybe just specks, but the birds in the sky itself offering up salt and pepper view. And the thought with the, again, with the artist's mind, delivering, carrying seed of imagination, the idea of offering up something to the viewer. And beyond the moon over Killarney, I'm guessing the moon over Killarney is the title itself. And
Talk a little more. Just a little bit longer. Keep talking.
I do like this. I'd have to see the picture to get a full note of where he was going with it.
Well, Killarney is Irish.
That's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
The place of wonder and fantasy and elves.
No.
Little guys.
We'll see. Let's party. And sing a song.
What are you doing? Getting dressed?
Maybe I am. Maybe I'm getting undressed. What does it matter? See?
Well, one is ugly. Right. The other is sure as hell does.
Killarney is a town on the shores of Loch Lean in the southwest Ireland's County Kerry. It's a stop on the Ring of Kerry Scenic Drives and the start and finishing point of the 200-mile Kerryway walking trail. Okay, nice. All right, Gene, what you got?
It's in the room. See?
Oh. I have to go.
See?
Nice. That is that's a gorgeous pick.
Okay. So,
damn.
This one is just good. Right back here. See, I'm going back to
the reflective flavor added to the water was a nice touch.
Yeah, it was a nice image. And I wish I had seen it before I read it with poem. Then maybe I would have packed it all together. But so okay, kids. Well, for my next magic trick, I'm going to put up a piece by Weaver of Dreams called Disguise. Hope you're having a good time there, Weaver. We miss you. We miss you still. Okay. Here goes.
I sweep around the ballroom floor, meeting and greeting all with aplomb. My dance card is filled within seconds. Tonight, I will be the belle of the ball. Then I feel as if I'm being watched. Across the room, dark eyes see all. Tall and lithe, with a slight shimmer, he has a powerful aura too. As I start to walk towards him, he's gone. Then a voice behind me says, "Boo! So far only I can see you're familiar. Are you looking for his next male witch?" So I have to ask why carry such an ugly beast around with you. It might be seen. Is it worth the risk? I turn and he's vanished once more. Let me see you. Are you afraid? I'll be gentle with you, boy, at first. This is my granddad, old and very grumpy, says he won't disguise himself anymore. Mr. Lean and Mean appeared again. Fine, park him, and let's dance. Be quick. Also keep your disguise on at all times, because I'm already feeling a mite sick. We could not live happily ever after, but the time we had was a blast.
Great read, Kate. Thank you for the sound clap. It is very much appreciated. All right, Laurent, what do you think of this? Laurent, you there? Are you mutating?
With a vengeance, my friend. I've never mutated so hard in my life, but it's all right. I'm sorry. I'm stuck on the picture. At first, I saw the lady. And then all of a sudden, I'm looking at what she's carrying, and it's hysterical, especially the way the hair is done with the two little pink whatevers. It has a certain horrible charm about it. But she takes that and does such a great job with the poem, which seems such at odds with the image itself, until, of course, we hear, though I have to ask why carry such an ugly beast around with you. to have it turn out to be the granddad is just, hey, this is just superbly clever. This is a heck of a call.
Absolutely. Thank you, though. Gene, how about you?
You know, I said this was just another great tale that Kate has told. You know, she's so wonderful with her storytelling. And, you know, I have to agree with Laurent. There's just that image is kind of like very different, very different. Not exactly what you would call the beast. You know, it's just odd. And I think that she nails that in the write itself. You know, it's tall in life with a slight shimmer. His powerful aura, too. As I start to walk towards him, he's gone. Then a voice behind me says, no, that's not what I wanted to say. I want to start the next stanza down. But are you looking for his next meal with? So I have to ask, why carry such an ugly beast around with you? It might be seen in his voice to this. I turn, and he vanished once more. You know, I don't know. My guess is maybe not everyone could see that beast. But that beast could see what others couldn't see as well. That's my guess on it. I don't know. But, you know, I can tell you, Kate is a great storyteller, and I enjoy her thoughts and her imagery when she writes a little story. That's why she does them. I love it. So nice job, and thank you so much for sharing. Hurry back. We'll see you Tuesday.
Yeah. She got a bronze for this one, too, so... Picture is a wild one at that, and then offering itself up as the belle of the ball, only to come across this one who shimmers, and he says, "Boo! So far, only I can see you're familiar. Are you looking for his next meal?" Which I kind of set the tone for the piece, playful. You get around to though I have to ask, why carry such an ugly beast around with you? It might be seen. Is it worth the risk? And turns, he's gone again. Let me see you, or are you afraid? I'll be gentle with you, boy, at first. There's a nice little playful role with this thing. I like the back end of this. We could not live happily ever after, but the time we had was a blast. So it does offer up maybe metaphorically. Look at that. If you're the belle of the ball, so to speak, you don't have a choice as to who comes to dance with you. You pretty much have to take everyone's hand that comes to you, because that's part of the motif as being the belle of the ball. Nicely done there, Kate. Thank you very much. All right, Gene, we're back on you.
Okay. The next piece I'm going to put up is called Paradise Lost and Found by Sapphire Lee. And I have an audio for this one as well. So, we're ready.
Paradise Lost and Found by Sapphire Rose. Feathered clouds cast shadows against the carbonized landscape. Earth's custodians once stood towering over a superabundant land that is no more. Charred remnants chase what's left. Paradise has fallen to the fire's might. Unforgiving and relentless embers handcuff the once flourishing valley. Towering sentinels that once stood guard silently bow their sheltering foliage in defeat. Echoing voices carried upon smoky breezes, as the clouds diffuse its cleansing rains, a stilled silence blankets the deadened remains. Through the years, a small sign of renewal can be seen, pushing up from the shadows, fighting to reach the sun and stand tall once again, custodians reclaiming their place. Paradise Lost has once again been found. End poem.
Great read, Sapphire. Thank you for SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Gene, let's start with you.
You know, this is a fabulous write. And I have to say, it was a great audio, too, so I don't want to take away from that. I love the addressing, you know, as far as the main, you know, because I forget what they call them, but, you know, when they set fires to have the earth rejuvenate. It's not really the actual way to say it, but that's all I see from the beginning of this, from the fire to the rebuilding, you know, the new sprouts growing and rebuilding that what was once a lush forest or area, you know, it's now coming back. But, you know, sadly, it had to go through that transformation for whatever reason. But it'll come back all the stronger for what happened. And I think that was just really, really well done, Sapphire Rose. And, you know, congrats on the front page six. Really well done.
Excellent. Yes. Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, how about you?
It strikes me as something that was written from the perspective of people who are there to appreciate the loss differently than the way nature appreciates its loss. If you think about it, fires have been going on forever. Lightning, certainly, you know, man wasn't around, but lightning was around, and there were fires. But as thinking people, as thinking entities, we can grasp the poetics. We can grasp the emotional reaction to charred remnants that chase what's left. Paradise has fallen with fire's might. We can appreciate the beauty nature appreciates to function. So this is written from a perspective that nature does not share. And that strikes me as being important because nature does what it has to do, but we do what we have to do as well. And our ability to appreciate the beauty of a forest and to personify the trees as towering sentinels and clouds diffusing cleansing rains, those are all important parts of of the human psyche, his ability to imagine, his ability as an empathic being, really, to think in this way, to philosophize in a way that nature can't. Nature is bound by its own rules, does what it has to clear land. Man burns the stuff back. I think it's called burn backs. And stupidity starts fires as well. And that is, you know, the real evil. When you have a fire that's deliberately set or set through carelessness that does destroy an area enjoyed by people, that is a real crime. But it's just different ways of looking at fires and nature. Great piece in any event.
Great comment. And I agree with you that there are three notes to the fires. As you said, lightning strikes have been around long before we have, and they took out forests, yet they grew back. You look at South America, where you got Inca ruins. There's some places down there where the Inca were before they pretty much died off and then moved out, where the whole landscape was cleared, yet they were growing fruit trees. They had this dirt they made, which is called black dirt, and they flourished there. And yet, once they were gone, it didn't take 400, 500, 600, 700 years for that to grow. It pretty much grew back overnight.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of this here itself, most people don't realize that you get a forest fire, it burns out a huge swath of acres, yes. But all of those, part of that's our own problem for not cleaning out the dead detritus beneath it and the trees that are dead and left standing. So part of that's our own fault for letting it go. But once that's been done, all those nutrients are put right back into the ground again. And that part of the forest is safe. It won't be struck again for another 50 years at least because it's regrowing itself. So something else will burn before it ever gets back to that realm. And it takes 50 years for the forest to rejuvenate. So it doesn't take that long. Well, it takes a lifetime in our mind, but in the thought of Earth itself, it's just a second when it comes to the grandiosity of how nature rejuvenates. So nicely expressed there, Sapphire. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
All
just
right,
so you know,
wait, come on.
I go to
wow.
Mother Nature was the original sin. She goes up to me, asks me, that's it. Just saying. Trying to be, you know, silly, but that's it. The next piece I'm going to put up is by Betty Page. and I'm going to give it a read. You're working hard tonight. Hello. Just kidding. Okay, this is called Wine and Roses by Betty Sue. Love spill across me. Indulge in my fine red wine. I'll be your dessert. Open my petals. Silky, soft, juicy satin. Lusciously sweet. Luxurious peach. Queen covers my strawberry. Erotic divine. Titillating high. I'm all intoxicated. So drunk when you love. Indulge in my fine red wine. I'll be your dessert. Open my petals. Silky, soft, juicy satin. Lusciously. Taste my wickedness, caress voluptuous curves, and tightly gripping. Cruise with me, witness, ride like a roller coaster, illuminate me. Luxurious peach, cream covers my strawberries, erotic divine. Titillating high, I'm all intoxicated, so drunk on your love. End poem.
Great read, Jean, and I'm glad you chose to read that one. Great.
I thought about giving it to you.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, we get to this. All right, yeah, this doesn't quite fit our masculine voices. Laurent, why don't you kick us off?
Oh, you got to give me a minute. I'm a poem behind. I'm sorry. I was trying to get in a decent comment for.
I'll whack it.
Thanks. Appreciate that.
This is a note to wanting that which everybody wants, the thought of love. Love, spill across me, indulge in my fine red wine, I'll be your dessert, offering up that note of pleasure sought to be between two people. She goes into some language, which is easily read for what it is. It is erotic, but it doesn't walk across that line where you're indulging into. Yeah, I could see this. This part A into part B, so to speak, offers up metaphors to play with and illuminate the mind, and it works well. Open my petals, silky, soft, juicy, satin, lushly sweet, pink. Taste my wickedness. Caress voluptuous curves. I'm tightly gripping. And then that thought with the roller coaster was a nice touch. And titillating high, I'm all intoxicated, so drunk on your love. Again, that reference right back to the first. I've got much to offer, and I want someone to love, so to speak. How about you, Jean? You got to read it.
You know, I thought this was I got to say, this was a carryover from my last Wednesday. And I think it was a beautifully written piece, so I thought. A great take on the prompt, which was the two wine glasses on the table. And I think she did a fine job with the write. And, you know, I have to thank her for entering the contest. And, again, for always letting us use her work on the shows. There was a lot of – it had a lyrical kind of quality to it because she repeated a couple of those stanzas. And it kind of, you know, gave you that feel. But, you know, it's like a lot of Betty's work. It's very sensual and nicely done. So thank you, Betty, for sharing with us.
And the rocks.
You know, there are those women out there who are married to men who have only ever imagined the missionary position and manage a few grunts for a couple of moments to enjoy themselves and then depart. And they never understand that a woman can be such a feast. Now, look, not to be chauvinistic, there are women that think the same way, obviously, but a woman as a meal is so beautifully described in here. Luxurious peach cream covers my strawberries, erotic divine. I love the metaphors that work in this. Love spill across me, indulge in my fine red wine. I'll be your dessert. Open my petals. Oh, Lord. You know, the mouth is such a wonderful thing. And love making because it can do so much and it's so sensitive to every little bit of feedback that it receives from the skin that is so eagerly devouring. This is a wonderful poem.
Nice. Thank you, Laurent. And back to you, Jean. Aha.
Yeah, there we go again. I played pool with him the other day. I want you to know. You do? Yeah. Dynamite.
Yeah.
Beat the sap out of me. Yep. I got poof. Laurent, I'm going to put this next piece up for you. It's called Dear Humanity. So whenever you're ready.
I recognize you. I love this. Excuse me. Dear Humanity. Dear humans. Speed of spirit is my name in your languages. Yes, Homo sapiens, there is a universal mind, an awareness-based accretion of galactic spirits, children of uncountable entities who live today and have lived. Entirely self-aware, gods, if such is your belief, populate your literature from times of our early contact with Earth's nascent intelligence. Up to now, no problems. And that brings us to the crux of the matter. Voices have been raised against Earth, condemning the violence of your species. In context, gods claim nothing of worth is derived by our signing of treaties. Not all believe this is so. Some have found you endearing, worth elevating human awareness past time we should be interfering. This decision is fluid, based on hope, a principle as thin as a whispered wish before a neck is stretched on a rope, seeking pardon from hemp's rough kiss. 1 decade to Earth has been granted, a microburst in galactic time. Find peace. Gods have commanded. Transcend hatred. Seek the sublime. My small friends, I wish you well. Others have failed when set to this task, and their planets' suns decorate the vastness of the universes with the rich colors of their supernova. One final blast of light, your dust now star food, the great continuation. My blessing means little, and luck is a cold-hearted fiction. And I offer one and hope for the other. End poem.
Great reading, Rob. Thank you very much. And Jean, we're coming to you.
Yeah, I think this was excellent, Laurent. I think that it had a very... I'm trying to find a word. But I think that the warning itself was conveyed beautifully in it. Excuse me. It has, it's very matter of fact, but it's very calm and serene with, basically, it's time to straighten up. You have a short time left, so you better get it right, kind of thing. Now, that's what I got. Now, I could be wrong, but I think I'm right.
No.
I think it was very well done. And yeah, science fiction, I get that, but I think that it still had that element of truth to a matter, so really nicely done.
Thank you, Jean.
This bites on a couple of things. It reminds me of that phrase from the day the earth stood still, Klaatu Barada Nictu, the sort of the need to say that to Gort so Gort can actually pick up the what we term as an interloper and bring it back to life, but it also offers up that notion of you've come to that point in your lifetimes that you are not obeying the laws of the universe and or other peoples within that universe, and it's been decided upon the council that you shall perish. You hit on that note with the supernova on the back end of this. But it also hits on up early the bite of what you call gods, those things that were everybody bled into from early creation because we didn't understand lightning, storms, the ocean, everything. So we gave gods names to gods who ruled over these entities, whether it was the ocean, whether it was volcanoes, and everything else, which also points in that direction. So you got a double note to both science fiction and the thought of what the Earth itself can do. And there's a bite in there for those who don't pay attention.
Thank you, Rex.
You're welcome. All right, Jean.
Okay. Rex, I'm putting this next one up for you. And this is called The First Lesson, Part 11 of Journey by Dan Duchino. And do me a favor, call on me last for comment. Thank you very much, and here you go.
Hey, no fair.
No. No trade back.
The First Lesson, Part 11 of The Journey by Daniel Duchino. I was never taught how to see. It's not something I think anyone is taught. You just have a vision, or you're blind, and all you think of is what I have missed. Once I was shown how I had been using my eyes only as an input device to light that happened upon them. Normality and need are as a sorceress pair, so much of the world disappears within the field of vision. Once I discover to look instead of just see, I then realize the world. Every shadow is a clue of a reflection that whispers in and out of existence with each eyelash cloud blink. Colors cry for separation to cleanse the world with tears and offer insight through prismatic possibilities. Distance, as a bird flying towards the horizon, and as I run to spread seed by its landing, my hand reaches out for it to feed, but with my eyes, there is always a bird in the distance and another one to bring focus to one yet further. With visions of the horizon, I reach thousandfold over and beyond, and there is always horizon, and there is always beyond, and of the ultimate, the darkness reveals. I find the darkness brings to focus what I always saw, but never knew, eternity, moon, sun, and the stars themselves seem unlimited, of which I always thought a blanket. On the clearest of nights, I see stars, the partner with daylight sky, to hide when mist performs its trickery. I remember the desert, with endless points perception in the night, and the band of dust within, I now see stars unlimited. With all that is merciful, how far can it go that I cannot see? Are we just a partner with a dance of the moon? What of the sun as a god among stars? I feel as an infant puzzling over toys that I have tripped over for years. I glance down at the earth, which grounds me, and I'm lost again in the infinitesimal of what details of distance does bring. Simple movement brings me from forever outward to a simple fallen leaf, and I see forever again. Closer to the eye, the more wide my eye gets, the sudden mirror reflectivity of cosmos and the invisible, how far in the infinitesimal small does the detail go? And I feel scared and lost and in bewilderment of the self. I was never blind, for at least a blind man can comprehend description. I was but lost in the burial of my own eyes, and now to awaken, to emerge from the earth, to the universe of visionary exploration. And I cry at the discoveries of a future of yet to understand and the loss of past visions from self-optical ignorant masochism. And poem. There you go, Laurent. You got the first dip into this one. And quite the dip this one's going to be.
Well, of course I do, because you were told that it was going to be me. it's all right, though. Look, this is a very long poem. Now, I'm going to get control. There you go, lady. This is a very long poem, a portion of which I'm going to address. I'm going to leave the larger portion of it to you, Rex, because you're better at this than I am. The section that says, are we just a partner with a dance of the moon? What if the sun is a god among stars? I feel as an infant puzzling over toys that I've tripped over for years. I glance down at the earth, which grounds me, and I'm lost again in the infinitesimal of what details of distance does bring. This entire poem seems to be, it explores looking without seeing. something that I think we all do from time to time, and it shows seeing while looking, realizing exactly what, as he says, forever looks like. Simple movement brings me from forever outward to a simple fallen leaf, and I see forever again. To be able to see forever in a leaf, to follow the line of reasoning, the extrapolation that takes that leaf, ponders its birth, where it lives, and where it's fallen, and how it does this time after time after time after time, is brilliance, just in a couple of little lines. And this poem is filled with visions and images and rationales and reasonings like that. I think it's really quite remarkable.
Absolutely. You're right. That note to the infinitesimal, the thought of the fallen leaf, and I see forever again, that notation to dipping into the macro and expanding the mind itself beyond what one can see, because like you said, we do see things, but we really don't see because we don't pay attention to the details that are right in front of our faces. They're pretty much ignored most of the time, and you might get an inkling somewhere down later in the day, I saw that and I missed it, and I wish I hadn't at that point in time. So the idea of opening wide to the possibilities as a universal note opens the mind up to that which is possible on even a genetic level to humanity itself. If you can look deeper into your own self to see deeper into that which is, then you're more aware of what's going on around you, which makes you a better person, a better curator, and someone who can offer up a bit more than just the happenstance of normality day to day. Because if you're looking more into your surroundings and you see beauty that's held there, then you can see the beauty beyond that and look further into yourself and further outwards. It's kind of like that notion of when you hit that thought of the universe and looking down on Earth. There's that kind of a little out of body experience and understanding what you're looking at, and then coming back to Earth and realizing there's more than meets the eye, and we just have to open and view rather than just look. Nicely done there, Daniel. Thank you. And as you requested, Gene, you're last on the bill.
Thank you so much. I absolutely needed that. I have to say that I thought this was the most excellent piece by Dan. You know, I like his pieces because they're usually kind of deep-rooted and give you some food for thought that just isn't superficial or on the surface. I thought it was great imagery and thought shared throughout the piece. There were a lot of deep thoughts conveyed in this wonderful poem. So thank you for sharing, Dan, and great piece. And well done.
But also, it kind of bites back on that song, I Once Was Blind, But Now I See.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. True. Now, let me see where I'm going from here. Okay. We still have a few left. I'm not going to do that because we did one already by then. Okay, the next piece I'm going to put up is by David Philip Ireland. He sent this to me in a private message, so here we go. And this is called The Black Leather Shroud by David Philip Ireland. And I have an audio for it now.
The Black Leather Shroud. Another rain-damp asphalt day, churches bare of soulless riders, hornet packs stream westward, coastward, across the April Brecon morn. Midst coppiced woods and shored-up hillocks come sudden blurs of leather zippers, hard-on, high-vault hellish demons, reckless barebacks out of time. Skim my mirrors, blistering paint, screaming spurs of rustled blades, sticky buds, eternal seasons, white-lined, cut-up everglades. hoops and hollers bright in movement, the last of you would be alive. Crystal seconds shatter violent, hornets raise the empty hive. Impact brutal, decibellant, asphalt drenched in gasoline. Saw him fly, bones contracting, broken life, a fragile dream. Past you as the saviors battled on with all their might, but in the end, your spirit soaring, in abstract skies they lost their fight. Still we lie, her breath above you, watching life fade from your eyes. Blood stains soak the leather shroud, weightless spirits soar and rise. Gathered round your tribe in sorrow, smouldering metal, cold and mute. Mourn the morrow's final chapter, a leather shroud, your dark salute. Rest now peaceful, unknown stranger, another soul whose light has shone. Now your hollers faded, distant, deathly echoes, heaven blown. Another sun-blessed asphalt morning, angels mark your kingdom come. Silent thought and wordless anthems fill the April Brecon morn. Chill the April Brecon morn.
Great read, David. Thank you very much for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciate it. And Ron, how did you think of that?
I thought this was fantastic. There's a motorcycle race, the Isle of Man. These motorcycles, over a course that is probably somewhere around 40 miles around the island, through city streets, along coastal highways, you have motorcycles moving at over 200 miles an hour. It's one of the most amazing things you'll ever see. And when I was reading this, it reminded me of nothing so much as that. Skim my mirrors, blistering paint, screaming spurs of rustled blades, sticky buds, eternal seasons, white line, ton up everglades. The crystal seconds shatter violent, hornets raise the empty hive, impact brutal, dissibilant, asphalt drenched in gasoline. Saw him fly, bones contracting, broken life, a fragile dream, all of that. I have seen in that race, and there are videos that you can watch on YouTube that are absolutely amazing. And this describes not so much the particular time and place of the accident, but the accident as it happens, regardless of venue. I think it's just brilliant the way he used the image of the black leather shroud, that standard piece of garb that all motorcyclists really need to wear. They're at all smart because it's going to protect you when you go down, and you will go down. Just another sun-blessed asphalt morning. It takes such a reflexive tone at the end after the brutal impact of the imagery that occurs in the beginning, and the somewhat lyrical quality of the ride that occurs in the first part of this poem. It really grabs me, and it grabs something special of the motorcycle rider, I think, who will view this kind of thing. And yet the next moment, back on the saddle, back in the saddle, and off down the highway. Beautifully written, just really beautifully written.
Nice. Thank you very much, Rob. Gene, how about you?
How did I know you were coming here? How did I know? Just saying. Always
kidding. There's only three of us. That's why.
Is that it? I don't know. You speak for yourself, man. Plenty of me.
Well, you're the twin. You're the twin. So what the hell, right?
Well, if I was lucky, I'd be twins. If I was any better, I'd be twins. There's about three or four of me floating around.
You're
better. Wonderful story told here. And I think that his thoughts throughout were so well presented and written with a great respect. I remember looking at this, and I looked at the AN, and I went, oh, my goodness, that's a lot of AN. And I think that he really, I don't know that it was all necessary to be put in the IN, because I think that well, if I can get it, anybody can get it. That's the way I feel.
It's a beautifully written AN, though.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. But definitely a wonderful piece. And I want to thank David for sharing with us, and I hope to see more of your work. He's got a new book coming out. And he has something else coming out, too, a CD. So I look forward to maybe hearing some more of that information from him, and that'll be wonderful. But, yeah, it's great piece, and thank you, as always. Mm-hmm. Whenever you're ready, that's all you
do. I like this. The opening, he sets the scene well. Another rain-damp asphalt day. Churches bare of soulless riders. Hornet packs stream westward, coastward, across the April Brecon morn. That hits on the easy sort of well, rain damp asphalt, a little note to being reckless, the hornet packs offering up that note to speed as well. The sort of soulless riders kind of hits at the idea of, yeah, you might have wanted to actually spend a bit of time at church before you go off doing such things. But no, I like the thought. He offers up Brecon Hill to a Brecon moon, morn. That thought to Brecon is southeast Wales. It's a small town. Ben rolls in. You get the nose of blurs of leather zippers, hand on high volt and hellish demons, reckless barebacks out of time. You get a nice note to the thought of bareback riding with horses, but this is clearly on the motorcycle angle, as you hit on, Laurent. And then he rolls into Rustle Blades. That's kind of stark vision right there. The language I love. Got some great thoughts in here. Whoops and hollers, bright in movement, the last you would be alive. Crystal second, shatter violent, hornets raise the empty hive. You get a notation deep in what's going on, and then the brutal decibellant, the roar, the sound. So you look at probably Harley. Asphalt drenched in gasoline, saw him fly, bones contracting, broken life, a fragile dream. Hey, I've fallen off a motorcycle, and you know what? Road rash sucks. Especially when you got it on with speed, and the next thing you see is your motorcycle heading out in front of you doing 50 miles an hour, and you're sliding on your ass and your elbows down the road. Not a good feeling, or one that you want to experience twice. But this is the back end of that, where it gets a little worse. Gas tank gets broken open, and everything goes to hell from there for the rider. Unfortunately, it's a great story, done well, and the language pursed it to something both dark and illuminated, and offering a note to sometimes bad things happen if you're not paying attention, unfortunately. Nicely done, David. Thank you very much. All right, Gene. Well, come on, I'll back up to you.
Okay. Don't mind me. I have a 90-pound dog trying to get up on my desk. Would you mind getting down, please? Thank you very much. I swear to God.
Hey,
okay.
Be careful. It's the boy he's
no
got up on your desk, and not his butt, in front of your face.
I don't know. Now he's heavy breathing in my ear. Okay, the next piece I'm going to put out is called Mother, I Salute You by Jenny the Duke. So here we go. And I have an audio for that.
Mother, I salute you. Mom, we may not see eye to eye a lot of the time. Often, we disagree more than agree. But through the years, we both learned, thankfully, how to accept and love wholeheartedly each other for who we are, flaws and all. Regretting nothing, just growing and healing. I truly appreciate you and all that you have done. Sorry for my faults, but thank you for forgiving me. Always, I will remember the fun times we had like Disneyland, Alaska, Canada, Mexico, Catalina. Unimaginable my world would be without you. To think I hated you for so long as a teenager. Everything you did was wrong, so I thought. You did what you could, and I thank you for being open and honest, accepting and understanding in more ways than one. End poem.
Great read, Jenny. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is much appreciated. All right, Jean, I think it's only fair the female in the room gets to start this one off. Mother.
That's me. You call me Eugene. That, I know my real title in this world. I thought this was a wonderful piece. I thought it was a wonderful, oh God, the word went out of my brain. I don't want to use the word tribute, but what I was going to say was close. A dedication piece to her mother. Because, you know, the older we get, the smarter our parents become, they say. And I find it to be very true. You know, when we're teenagers, you know, most of us, I can't say all of us, because, you know, there's always exceptions to the rule. I've always been one. You know, we always feel like you're wrong, you don't know, you don't understand, and all these other things. And then when you get older, you say, yeah, maybe she knew more than I thought she had. Maybe she's right. You know, and there's a bit of acknowledgement of that in this. But it was really a lovely light, you know. I'm sorry for my fault, but thank you for forgiving me. Always I will remember the fun times we had. Unimaginable my world, I skipped along, but unimaginable my world would be without you. To think I hated you for so long as a teenager. Everything you did was wrong, so I thought. You know, you did what you could, and I thank you for being open and honest, accepting and understanding in more ways than one. I think it was a lovely piece and very well said. So great job, Jenny, and thanks for putting it up tonight. Yep.
Okay. Thank you, Jean.
Mm-hmm.
And Laurent, how about you?
Well, the reason this poem succeeds so well is that it describes to me a shared epiphany. Well, let me tell it this way. When there's a family get together, say 50, 100 people, and my wife has a very large family, the people tend to group by age. And I found that all of a sudden, I'm part of a group of quote unquote wise old men who sit in small circles and comment on things they hear about them, they hear around them. Most noticeably, the younger crowd, the cousins of the aunts and the uncles, who walk around at that wonderful age between 20 and 40 years old when they know it all. And look at their aged relatives, somewhat askance, wondering why in God's name they have become people they don't recognize anymore. They take the lead in their mouth, so to speak, and yank at the reins of training and kind of belittle their parents and their elders as being people who are past their time, if you want. And when she says, often we disagree more than agree, but through the years we both learn, thankfully, how to accept and love wholeheartedly. Well, you know, the elders know how to do that automatically, I think. And they also look at the young ones and they realize that they're simply not old enough yet to understand, but we all reach that age of our parents, and everything that they did becomes very crystal clear because you find yourself doing the same thing. It is a universal truth I think we all live through. So as part of this little group of elders who sit together at family get-togethers, we like to laugh at the younger generation because we know that when they reach our age, they will understand. And while this poem doesn't exactly hammer that point home, when she says, "The thing I hated you for so long as a teenager, everything you did was wrong, so I thought, but then understanding with age why those things were done, it's It's a delicious understanding that the elders have, kind of looking at the young ones going, yeah, they'll find out.
Mm-hmm. Like I said,
absolutely.
There's
a heavy note of irony in that one. And it brings back that that quote, youth is wasted on the young. It needs to be embalmed into the aged who have the knowledge that has spanned their years lived. Now, what I like most about this one, though, you guys hit on that. I like the fact this is an acrostic, and it's not an obvious acrostic. I hate when people do that. They separate out and marginalize the acrostic going down or going up or whatever.
Mother, I salute you.
So the reason the reader doesn't get to find that themselves, which is what an acrostic should do. You should let them delight the fact, hey, wow, that works. I like that. Thank you very much. But yeah, that note, you hit on that thought of Disneyland, Alaska, Canada, Mexico, and Catalina for places they went on vacation to. Hell, that's quite a note to places visited. Most people would be satisfied the fact they actually got to go to Disneyland, let alone Alaska, Canada, Mexico, and Catalina to boot. Those are great arenas to be dipped into. I mean, Alaska, the great white outdoors, so to speak. Mexico, with its grand offering of traditional Spanish guitar, food, music, and everything else that goes along with it. Catalina's a nice place to go. But that thought is, I hated all of us go through that stage as teenagers. We're invisible. We think we know everything. And the only thing we actually know is that we're full of shit and it pours out of our bloody ears. But we don't get to realize that. Until we're older. So this is a nice tribute to the fact that all things do come around and they bite you in the ass somewhere down the line, and it is still that note of irony. Yeah, you thought you knew it all, but now realization smacks you in the face and you're gobsmacked at the idea, oh, how stupid was I to begin with? Obviously, mm-hmm. quite a bit. We all were.
Mm-hmm.
Nicely done, Jen. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
All right, Jean, we're back on you.
Okay. The next piece I'm going to put up is by Poetic Picasso. And this is called The Ashes of Her Lust. So, let me put that button.
My dedication to Afasiana. Loud in winds echo the susurrations of her malicophonous voice. She is the incarnation of the sable shade of darkness. Her laughter is the sound of the eeriness of the night. Her eyes reflect the glow of a haunting seduction. I am enthralled by her central curves that are the rapture of the moon. Her bosom tempts me with a wicked temptation. My passion feet off the moisture of her delicate skin. She tames my wildest desire with her eroticism. So exotic are her lips and the strands of her hair. I plunge into the depth of her lustful swirls. So I fade into the loud moans of no return. A naked prisoner for eternal pleasures. I burn in the ashes of her lust, in the dungeon of her ecstasy, forever to taste the scent of her flesh, as I am the servant to the mistress of darkness.
Frank, thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And it sounds like you took Pam up and visited her in the dungeon, and you're still down there. Gene, you want to comment first?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what am I going to say? No. I'm the only girl here. You know what I mean? Like, you know.
Let's come back to you.
But I think that this was just an excellent write by Frank. It was very sensual with that touch of darkness in it. And you know, his reads are always, you know, great. His performances, you know, for lack of a better word, something that's more spot on, which I don't know what word that would ever be, is very well done. I mean, here I am. So exotic were her lips and the strands of her hair. I plunge into the depth of the lustral scrolls as I fade into the loud moans of no return and make it prisoner of her eternal pleasure. I burn in the ashes of her lust, in the dungeon of her ecstasy, forever to taste the scent of her flesh, as I am the servant to the mistress of darkness. I don't even need to go any further. I probably could have plucked a couple more stanzas, but I think that those two stanzas were just perfect for what he was saying throughout. They're just a wonderful, I don't know. Anyway, I think this is fabulous. So thanks, Frank. Look, you got me speechless now. That's a record. Write that on the calendar. Very well done. It was yummy.
Nice. Thank you. Laurent, how about you?
I was most taken, like Jean, by those stanzas. Especially, I burn in the ashes for lust. That conjures such an image of a small spark igniting a larger flame, and the flames consuming the wood and spreading to various parts of the overall, consuming bit by bit, yet elevating the flames higher and higher as they do so, until finally what's left are the ashes in which two bodies reside. Not just he, but her at the same time, burning the ashes of her lust. It's just a great phrase. I love it.
Excellent, you too. Thank you very much. I love that first stanza. The howling wind echoes the susurrations of her malocaphonous voice. She is the incarnation of the sable shade of darkness. Her laughter is the sound of the eeriness of the night. Her eyes reflect the glow of a haunting seduction. What a great opening. So already you're in line. All right, we're getting into some succubus action. And he keeps drawing on that, being enthralled with sensual curves that are the rapture of the moon. My passion feeds off the moisture of her delicate skin. She taints my wildest desire with her eroticism. And then a naked prisoner of her eternal pleasures. And I did too, like that last stanza, like the opening, it finishes with a distinct flourish. And I am a servant to the mistress of darkness. So, well done, Frank. Thank you. Oh, Jane, we're back on you.
Okay, I have two poems left.
We're back on her. Is this a group
always
thing or what?
Oh, okay. No holds barred on Friday.
I gotta know.
We gotta do a little Bugs Bunny. Dog pile on the Eugene. Dog pile on the Eugene.
Oh,
smack him, Gene. Smack him. Smack him.
I'll smack him later. No.
Well, no, you don't get it, because that reference to Bugs Bunny is he goes dog pile on the rabbit, yet he's the one on top of the dog.
We got it.
The dog pile on the rabbit.
That's okay. I feel smack him in public. Okay. The next piece, excuse me, that I'm going to put up is called Heartbreak Horizon by Ben Hart. And I have an audio for this one.
Oh,
screen just jumped. So let me put that on. And here we go.
Heartbreak Horizon, a poem by Ben Hart. Part 1, The Unbeing. Flight or invisibility? What a dumb question. were invisible already and too heavy for wings to set us free from the flat-packed prisons of depression. There's a woman, falling apart in the beautifully unhappy streets of Stuttgart, leaving the uncaring crowds to become clouds one tear at a time. She takes little trips to the sea, behind evacuating eyes, with offerings on her cheeks, so whatever ached her so would one day be the gift that bridged earth and absent sky. Contrast wasted on the other cheek. When will they learn to take a look around when there's still something to be found taking a stand against emptiness? There's a man fading away, finally giving in to the indifferent decay, the wind that leads the fields into motion, earth imitating ocean to cleanse him from her canvas. And he is glad to wilt, become just shape among the storm, the embeing of what's been. Because if cathedrals were built for someone no one's ever seen, imagine what they'd build for him. Part 2. A Brooklyn Ballet. There she goes, dancing to the car alarms, giving hope another chance of bruising her insides. And when the music slows, she's just a vagrant in the dark, safely entranced in the saturnine romance between joie de vivre and suicides. Getting glow-in-the-dark tattoos, a list of names karma has yet to depress, and perhaps tonight she won't drink herself to sleep. Loosening the bedsheet noose to use it as a swing instead, and at the first sign of light she can finally weep. For all the towers with their lights out, because she was once part of millions, but it only took losing you to kill Brooklyn. And though she's out of sight now, free to scream at the ducks in the pavilions, because never again will eyes halfway to blue catch her looking, she hates the fact it's not that hard being yourself in a ghost town. Part 3. Sparrow Song. Darling, what have we done? Opened the door to the breakers and we were ripe for the taking. Someone stole the warmth of the sun and left us with none, just our failures and aching. And though I was not good at unknowns, I tried to follow you into that storm. How I hoped to be wrong, but when I heard Sparrow's song, I knew this is the end of our love. Whoever thought an I love you could hurt? You were meant to follow my words to where I gave myself back to the earth. Now who will watch me become dust? Who do I get to scream at? I'm leaving. Somehow it hurts worse to know I'm not the only one grieving. The end of our love. End poem.
Great read, Ben. Thank you for the sound card. Very much appreciated. And you ought to do some more of these. Great voice for reading. Thank you very much. And Laurent, let's start with you.
I sensed you would do this. You never go first, you devil. This is an enormously interesting poem. The Unbeing, which seems to address, from the male point of view, what happens when a love begins to decay, when he is glad, when one of the two, as the poet puts, is glad to wilt, becoming just shaped among the storm, the unbeing of what's been. If cathedrals were built for someone no one has ever seen, imagine what they built for him. And then to move into the Brooklyn Ballet, which begins to talk about the other half, the one who is no longer part, the one that he's wilting from. She hates the fact it's not that hard being yourself in a ghost town. We have a woman who begins to realize that being without love is not necessarily a fatal thing. It's not a terrible thing. All finishing in the Sparrow Song, when the two begin to approach each other from his perspective, darling, what have we done? Open the door to the breakers, and we were just ripe for the taking. And when he says, how I hope to be wrong, but when I heard the Sparrow Song, I knew this is the end of our love. Whoever thought an I love you could hurt? that. I find just a very, very deep and profound statement, because, and I love you when it no longer matters, probably does hurt worse than anything else that you can possibly hear. And to have one person realize the other person is grieving at the end of love as badly as you are has got to be the ultimate thing. Really a brilliant work.
Nice. Excellent. Thank you a lot. And Jean, how about you?
She's mutating.
Okay, that's,
God, I've had
that's
you
that
tonight.
First time, first
you made,
time tonight.
You made all the way to closing just about.
But painful work, guys, are based in loss of on a lost love and the sadness that's felt by the one who's left behind here. Because he starts out with the bedsheet line and kind of leads you to the nuances of him pointing towards suicide. And I've seen that before in his work. So automatically my mind lingered there. But, you know, grieving the loss, knowing the love of the lived one is what I got from that, because, you know, it says, I'm not only grieving the end of our love. Then it says that down here underneath of that, it says, wherever we go from here, I love you. And I have to pull that up into part of this poem, because I feel that it's a really important part of the poem. So, excellent job, Ben, and thanks for sharing with us. I really appreciated the share tonight.
It was a good piece. I like that note to the unbeing, because he hits on both angles in that first long thought, because it bites at the dysentery of both angles. There's a woman falling apart and beautiful on the happy streets of Stuttgart, leaving the uncaring crowds to become clouds one tear at a time. And then on the back end of this opening piece, there's a man fading away, finally giving in to the indifferent decay, the wind that leaves the fields into motion, eat earth imitating ocean to cleanse him from her canvas, and he is glad to wilt. So there's that note of both giving in, unwilling to fight for what they held. And I like that thought with the Brooklyn Ballet, that there's almost a note there of, a saving trance and a saddening romance between joie de vivre and suicide, the idea of kind of going out and filling that void in the moment, getting glow-in-the-dark tattoos, a list of names karma is yet to depress, and perhaps tonight she won't drink herself to sleep. And then that thought, loosening the bedsheet noose to use it as a swing instead, so she can finally weep, the note to finally giving in to the act is gone. And that thought of, Brooklyn dying to kill Brooklyn. It only took losing you to kill Brooklyn. And that thought to finally walking in, the end of the acceptance in the seventh stage of grief. She hates the fact it's not that hard being yourself in a ghost town. The emptiness, because you're in a place where there's millions of people, yet you feel alone. And the thought with the Sparrow Song, especially at the back end of this, it did hit on that note again of the unwillingness for them to fight for what they had, the ease of letting it all go, and how, in the end, when you had something that strong, it bites you hard in the ass, and you don't realize how much pain can be derived from it until you are walking in those very leaden shoes. Nicely done, Ben. All right, Jean, we're back to you for closing arguments.
Closing arguments. Where should I start now? No, I'm not going to argue with anything. But this was it was a great show, everybody. You know, guys, fellas, Kuya, wonderful poetry tonight. And we only have one carryover, and that is Scott Sharp. And I think I'm going to throw it on your show for Sunday, Rex, because it's a mother piece. It's, you know, a tribute to you.
Okay, cool.
So, that way I don't want to skip one and wait till next Friday. That would be silly. So I'd be happy to do that. But what a great show, full of great poetry, wonderful reads, writes, comments, if I do say so myself, no, I'm only kidding. I'm only kidding. I'm never the queen of comments, and I admit it freely. But just really a good night. You know, I like that. I like the open poetry angle of it. Because you never know what someone will share with us. And that I think that's what makes it kind of fun. I never know where it's going to go. So I have an idea. I just don't let it get too far. But wonderful work. And thanks, guys, for calling in and hanging out with me. Yes, as always, thanks for co-hosting with me. Much appreciated. And, yeah, we'll have to do it again next week, maybe. Oh, wait, I'll see you on Sunday. Yes, yes, yes. Got to do that.
Yeah.
And then I have Tuesday, and then I'll be back on Friday. So, yeah, we should stay out of trouble by the time it's all said and done. But, yeah. So, anyway, that's the end of all that good stuff. Anything you want to say, Greg?
Oh, no. We're good to go.
Okay. Okay, sounds good to me. And thank you, and thank you, Laurent, for calling in from the beginning. Weaver?
It was a blast. I enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Excellent.
Okay, everybody. We're out of here. Thank you. Thank
all right,
you, thank you.
Good night.
Good night.